and Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Hi, this is Eva Herr. Thanks so much for taking time to be with us tonight. Tonight we're going to have Dr. Charles Gant, and we're going to talk about his book, ADD and ADHD, Complementary Alternative Medicine Solutions. But we're also going to talk about methylation, mood disorders, and addictions, and things that you can do naturally with what you put in your mouth and what you put in your mind. So welcome, Dr. Gant. Thank you for taking time out of your day to be with us.
Yeah, thank you, Eva. Great to be here.
And before we get started, would you just tell us a little bit about you? Tell us the books that you have available, the website where people can find you, and a little bit about how you came to do what it is that you're doing.
Well, my journey in this direction started 40 years ago as I began to explore the humanistic psychologies and Vipassana meditation. And I attempted to, work on my model of psychiatry practice based on those kinds of treatments that I found very useful for me. And I was somewhat successful, but it led me back to the biochemical angle because no matter what I did with some people, of course, they didn't seem to make any substantial progress. And as I got into addictions in my 30s and started treating alcoholism and substance abuse, that was the perfect opportunity to really, really understand the neurotransmitter hypothesis and to work on brain detoxification and metabolic balancing and the truly, biochemical and functional medicine, because around that time the solid biochemical testing to test amino acids and toxicities and metabolic imbalances and immune dysfunction was really coming into vogue, and that's where I've pretty much been ever since. Although I've continued to do a little psychotherapy and a little bit of meditation teaching on the side, mostly when my patients are able to get to the point where their brain works. But I found that if their brain is not functioning due to these kinds of biochemical imbalances, it's very, very difficult for them to wake up to their full potential. So I wrote some books on addiction and ADHD and trying to find an alternative to Ritalin, which is cocaine, essentially. So we're putting cocaine into the brains of, nearly 10 million kids. And if that is not an unspeakable atrocity or of a spiritually empty society, nothing is. I mean, to do that to children, that drives me crazy. So I wrote books on this. We did some studies, published them, and showed that there is nutritional, biochemical answers to this inattentiveness, and demonstrated that it works just as good as the stimulant medication.
So you're a medical doctor?
I'm a medical doctor, PhD in psychology. And for contact information you were asking for, Dr., D-O-C-T-O-R, Chaz, C-H-A-S, drchaz.com, and then drchazmd@gmail.com. And I can even provide you a phone number, 888-632-6938. And much of my life now is spent trying to educate the public and educate physicians at the Academy of Functional Medicine where I teach, attempting to help clinicians break out of the cycle of just medicating everything that comes in front of them and beginning to understand the biochemical, toxicological, metabolic, immune, infectious, allergic roots of why illness, medical or psychiatric, why it happens, and to become authentic healers again by making good diagnostic assessments of those variables and treating people according to their unique individuality.
And where is it that you teach? Is there a website for that?
The website, which you can reach through the drchaz.com or those numbers, is the Academy of Functional Medicine. .com. And the Academy is a webinar training that has no geographical location because we have doctors from all around the world that are learning how to practice functional medicine.
I think that's a wonderful thing. I really do. Okay, to get started, you have so much to say, and I want to learn from you rather than talk all the time during your interviews. So
I'm always the one that learns the most.
So do you want to start with gut? Where do you want to start?
Sure. Gastrointestinal.
Is that a good place to start?
Sure.
Okay. I'm going to let you go then. If you get to stop talking, I'll ask questions. Otherwise, I'm just going to let you go since you have so much to say.
Well, all gastrointestinal disorders are very straightforward and should all be reversed very easily. The mnemonic is the five R's. We have to remove unfriendly flora, parasites, yeast, bacteria. We have to re-inoculate good flora. Then we have to replenish digestive enzymes and then repair the gastrointestinal lining, which is often so battered by parasites and yeast and inflammation that leaky gut happens, and then food starts to leak through the intestines and the immune system starts to attack food, perfectly nutritious food. And then restoration of detoxification and liver function. So remove the bad flora, re-inoculate the good flora, replenish digestive enzymes, repair the lining of the intestines, and restore liver detoxification. So if those principles are followed, then there should not be any gastrointestinal disorders. And on top of that, since 80% of the immune system lives in the intestines, when that healing happens, so many chronic medical and psychiatric disorders disappear. And they're in large part, for many people, driven by gut inflammation and food allergy. So healing the gut is a good place to start in the process of healing from any kind of chronic medical or psychiatric disorder.
So how do you, what do you, and here's one thing I'd like for you to address if you have the time, just because I experience it, and I know if I experience it, many other people must experience it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll say this, and then you can go. I eat a very clean diet. I eat only grass-fed meat, only free-range chicken, and only organic foods, no sugars, no carbs. So and I take a lot of supplements because I had a heart attack a few years ago. When I take methyl sponges or methyl donors, this weird thing happens in my gut and, like, suffocates me sometimes. If I take too much niacin, I get suffocated. If I take too much methyl donor, and I get mucus kind of thing, you know, like sinus stuff. If I take too much methyl donors, then I get suffocated. So I know most people, I would imagine, suffer similar things. So if you have anything to say about that throughout
The methylation issue is a separate issue, generally.
Is it methylation that does that?
No. It's simply the overgrowth. The bottom line is the overgrowth of some kind of organism that good stool cultures should be done to clarify exactly what it is, and then cultures and sensitivities where they grow the organism in the laboratory and find out what herbs and what antibiotics destroy it. So that's the remove part, which is clinically the most difficult, because you have to get a good diagnosis. You have to zero in on what the organism is. And I just don't see, I mean, certainly a few docs in the conventional area, but I don't even see docs in the alternative, holistic area doing this very well. And oftentimes it comes down for people who are otherwise well, who have discovered that they do better on a Paleolithic diet like you described, it usually comes down to a fungal infestation that certain measures need to be taken to get rid of. Because once candida or fungus gets a hold of you, you can manage it with some herbs or some, you know, a diet that's free of carbohydrates, but it's dug in and it's not going to leave unless three main things are done. It has to be treated with nystatin or amphotericin, which is a true antifungal, the low-carb diet, as you mentioned, and strong probiotics to re-inoculate the intestines with good flora. And so one of those, if that's what is going on with you, then one of those is not happening, and probably it's that you haven't been given a good 2 or 3 months of an antifungal, and these antifungals do not get absorbed. They're 100% recoverable in the stool, so they don't really go in the body. They just go right through. So they're safer than herbs. I mean, because they're called antifungal antibiotics. They have to be prescribed, but they do not get absorbed at all. So you can take them as long as you want, in as high a dose as you want, and so they need to be prescribed and aggressively, because the only time when it makes sense to put a toxin in the body is if it's removing something far more toxic. So sometimes I will administer a toxin orally or intravenously as a chelating agent, because it removes something more toxic like mercury or lead. And an antibiotic used properly can be used to remove something far more toxic. So candida or fungus is a million times more toxic than the antibiotic that's used to remove it. And I just don't see that these antibiotics are being used properly.
Thank you. So thank you for touching on that for me, because and for whoever else has that. But take off and go wherever you think we should go right now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, yeah, I mean, I had written these books, and it was about finding alternatives for medication that tweaks certain neurotransmitters, like the SSRIs tweak serotonin, and the stimulants are hitting on the dopamine receptors, the brain's natural cocaine, and the benzodiazepines are artificially stimulating the GABA receptors, and acetylcholine is the nicotine receptors in the brain. So we found alternatives to all of these medications and used amino acids and natural substances to address them. And we were able to achieve some success in the 80s and 90s and the first part of this century. But then we found out that it really wasn't mostly about putting back the natural neurotransmitters that are the natural stress hormones. Still, I do that, and we are always looking for alternatives to psych meds and to illicit drugs and alcohol and tobacco and so forth. But the real issue is that it isn't so much about putting back the feel-good brain chemistry. It's more about removing the stress neurotransmitters, especially noradrenaline. So the whole issue around methylation is an issue around methylating away the fight, flight, stress-causing neurotransmitter, noradrenaline. And this was a huge discovery because it's completely on the opposite side of things. See,
I'm curious, since we worked on that Alliance for Addiction Solutions together, has it been since then or before that?
Yeah, it's been...
new?
It's been since the inception of that in 2004, 2006, in there. It began to dawn on me that I had completely missed the boat. And when you think about it, Alcoholics Anonymous is not about feeling high, doing things to make yourself feel good and feeling pleasant and joyful. I'm not knocking that, but Alcoholics Anonymous authentic recovery is more about what do you do about stress, depression, fear, anxiety, anger, all these negative mood states and compulsive behaviors that take us down. How do we handle that without medicating them with psychotropic drugs? So we had thought that it was about putting back enough serotonin and enough dopamine and enough GABA to accomplish that, but it really isn't about that. It's about what we do with the stress. And stress is driven by noradrenaline. And to make noradrenaline go away, it has to be methylated. So those of us that are hypomethylators are the ones that are most vulnerable to fight, flight, stress from any cause. It could be psychoemotional, it could be metabolic stress, it could be immune stress, toxic stress, energetic stress. It could be the electrosmog of putting a cell phone on our head 24/7 and letting the electromagnetic microwaves stress us. So it's about stress and how we get by in the world without anesthetizing our stress. How do we deal with that? So now we're down to the spiritual question. This is the question. Fight, flight, stress is about a separate self. I got to run for my life. I got to fight for my life. It's about me protecting me, my survival, me. Which I'm not knocking that either. It's just that it's not about my existential aloneness, my separateness, and how to protect myself. It's about how I make a connection beyond the separate self to something greater, something infinite. That's what life's about. And it's very difficult to do that when noradrenaline and fight-flight stress is raging in the brain, keeping me separate, keeping me locked into fear and anger and stress and all the depression and all that stuff, which keeps me separate, keeps me suffering in a separateness, say. So by properly methylating, by taking those measures to limit fight, flight, stress little by little, removing the immune stressors, the allergic stressors, the toxic stressors, and working on the psycho-emotional stressors. By doing that, what happens is that it's much easier to make that connection to something greater than a separate self. And so now we have a biochemical model, a genetic model that fits exactly with all the spiritual paths, fits exactly with AA and recovery.
So where does someone, if you have to tell them step number one, to start doing this, assuming that part of this is going to be meditation and spiritual practice, what's the other part, the physical practice? Where do they start?
Well, you start with immune stress and gastrointestinal health. You start with toxicities and heavy metals, getting mercury fillings out. Start to eat organic food and clean water. You start with food allergies and, you know, getting tested. Get to a $100 test to find out if the food allergies are there. If you live in this part of the world, you better start with testing for Lyme and Babesia and Ehrlichiosis and all these Lyme tick-borne types of illnesses that are stressing people. So when I evaluate a patient, I mean, I'm doing my doctor thing. I'm trying to get them well. But I have my eye on the bigger picture, because if I can help a patient de-stress and I test for the immune stressors, the metabolic stressors like hypoglycemia, the nutritional stresses, people are just massively deficient in certain nutrients, and hormonal stressors, I balance hormones. So I will test 700, 800 variables now on each person, because I don't leave many stones unturned, because I want to see the individual not only heal, but I want to see them de-stress to the point where they can get their head above the water and start looking around and saying, why am I here? Why am I alive? What is my purpose? What is the meaning of being alive at all? I want them to de-stress enough that they can go past their separateness, their stressed individual self, and start to connect in a much larger way with other people and the world and everything around them, so that they can transcend this separateness and come to a spiritual understanding of why they're alive.
That would be a great thing. I mean, it's a tough one. My son just came back from working with Christina Veselik's organization, and that's what he said to me today. I'm trying to figure out, I'm learning why I'm alive, Mom.
Yes.
Learning why I'm alive. So how would one, what would be the first thing that one could do to stop that noradrenaline? When you get caught up in that, how can you stop that? I mean, I know there's lots of steps, but you gotta get fight or flight to get going.
Yeah, anything that can be done to peel away the fight flight is very helpful. One of the simple things that can be done is to, I mean, depending on economic resources, but for $99, you can contact 23andMe, 23andme.com. A million people have done the gene testing. And for another, once you get the data, which will pretty much be genealogical data, 23andMe is not allowed to provide you with your risks genetically of getting heart disease and cancer and so forth. But they will give you the raw data of your gene testing. And then you can contact us at Dr. Chaz, D-O-C-T-O-R, Chaz, chaz.com, and you can convert your raw data through 23andMe. I think my people over there charge $30 or something, which is what the going rate is, to make that conversion. And now you have the genes that tell you genetically what you are vulnerable for. And if you are a poor methylator because of you don't have an ability to make methylfolate, then you need methylfolate. Now, in your case, since you tried, I presume you tried methylfolate and you found that it didn't help you or made you feel worse, then that usually means you have the genes for a B12 problem and you would do better with vitamin B12. Some people... Okay, go ahead.
I was just going to say, fortunately, I have Amy Yatsko is helping me do my stuff.
Right.
So I don't want to, I mean, I'd love to sit here and talk to you the rest of the show about me, but I feel stingy doing that. I feel selfish doing that. So what if we do it this way? Let's assume, let's say people have MTHFR and COMT, because we know so many.
Yeah, I have COMT.
Let's talk about that, because so many people with, you know, mood problems and ADHD and depression and addictions have those. Do you want to start there with those two? Those
sure.
Two.
Sure.
My listeners are somewhat educated about methylation and genetics, because we've been doing shows for a couple of years, so if you want to go down the rabbit hole with one, that would be good.
Sure, let's go. Well, the first thing, I mean, the insight is understanding what you're dealing with. And a perfect simple model for understanding this is sickle cell anemia. People who have one normal gene from one parent and one sickle cell gene from another parent have resistance to malaria, which some medical anthropologists believe has killed more people than all other diseases combined in the history of this earth. So what happened with this parasite, this malarial parasite, is it changed our DNA. And if you have one gene for sickle cell, you have an advantage over people who don't have it if you live in a part of the world where there is malaria. Now, a much smaller percentage of people have are unlucky. In the luck of the draw, they get two sickle cell genes, and they can have sickle cell disease. But Mother Nature says, well, it's better that than to have no resistance to malaria. And so that's why this gene exists. Now, the methylation genes are the same thing. People who have some of these genes are more compulsive, restless, they work harder, they care more. They may not sleep as much, but they're going to make sure the job gets done. They tend to be more extroverted and more of a tendency to get into positions of decision-making and control. They're the movers, shakers. So early
about
in life...
I'm sorry, are we talking about COMT just so we're clear?
Oh, all of them.
Okay.
COMT, MTHFR, the betaine homocysteine methyltransferase, on, all of these methylation genes, there's dozens of them. If you have some of them, then you have advantages, and during your younger years where you're more physiologically adept and you can put up with some of that compulsiveness and some of the restlessness, you simply make more money. You're attractive. You're attractive as a mate, and those advantages through natural selection get passed on to your offspring. So having some of these genes is advantageous in the early years. Now, midlife and later, they are risk factors for cancer and heart disease. So the cruel joke of Mother Nature is that people with enough of these methylation genes will sow their seeds early, and they'll just live a dynamic life and die younger with heart disease, cancer, and other disorders. So we have a way now of changing genetic expression. We can't change the genes, but we can change the way these methylation genes express themselves. But the point is, there is always going to be a smaller percentage of people who have too many of these genes. And people that get too many of these genes get too much of a good thing. They're like the person that's homozygous for sickle cell. They got sickle cell disease. And these are the individuals that get into serious addictions, mental disorders, and so forth. So they're the people that we need to help right away, to get to those people first and get and tone down this fight-flight stress that they're medicating with alcohol and drugs or medicating with psych meds.
Go ahead.
Well, that's one thing. And then we have to think about the people that have too many of these genes for midlife and later because they're going to die of early heart disease and cancer. So we want to get to those people too.
That's what I was going to ask you about. Actually, I'm one of those people, so I have to live that and thank God step beyond it, I think. Could you tell people what to look for? Like, say, for example, when I do VAPs, I do testing every 3 months, and I look at my homocysteine, my C-reactive protein, I watch my liver.
Right.
You know, could you tell people, one of my clients that came to see me had a homocysteine that was, like, off the charts. So I sent him to a medical doctor, and the medical doctor said, "Oh, you don't have to worry about that homocysteine. That's probably because you run too much." You know, so the guy went away thinking that it was okay to have that homocysteine. So could you give the people things that they need to look at home when they go for their routine labs that their doctors may or may not know? And let me just say this. Dr. Gant is a medical doctor, but we are not here to attempt to treat or diagnose you. This show is for informational purposes only. Please address anything that you have with your personal caregiver. Just want to get that out there.
Because most, at the end of the day, you don't want to die tomorrow with something.
Right.
So you want to intervene right away. But yes, people that are hypomethylators who can't methylate homocysteine and convert it into methionine, so that they can make some more SAMe and make more noradrenaline go away, these people will have high blood pressure. They'll be more likely to mobilize fats and lipids and have high cholesterol. And with a high level of noradrenaline, the fight-flight neurotransmitter, such individuals are more likely to have arrhythmias in their heart. So that advice is just pure ignorance that patient received. And they need to go to a genetic counselor, a functional medicine doctor, a doctor that practices complementary alternative medicine, somebody. Keep going doctor to doctor if you have to find somebody who can give you the answers on it.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, so the first thing I can do very inexpensively is take betaine or trimethylglycine. You can go to the health food store and buy betaine, and betaine will methylate away homocysteine. Just makes it evaporate. So it's very inexpensive, and it's good for digestion, and it's a nutrient. So you can betaine, HCL, very inexpensive. You can get in any health food store, and that will generally at least cut homocysteine down to half of where you were.
So is that the same as beetroot, or are those two different things?
I don't know. Although I've heard that it may come from that. I'm a biochemist, so I don't really know the whole foods area. I'm not a nutritionist, so I don't know where some of these things come from. I'm kind of like the astrophysicist where they discovered a new planet, and the media person asked them which constellation it is in. And the astrophysicist had no idea what constellation it was in, you know.
So what about methionine? You brought that up. Is it safe? Is that the best way to get it? I mean, can you just supplement with methionine? Is that okay?
Well, it really should be tested. If we don't test, we've guessed. Maybe there's one thing that the listeners can take away tonight. If you don't test, you've guessed. We're all biochemically unique. So when we test, and everybody has a unique pattern of these genes, a unique pattern of their nutritional requirements, their toxicities, their immune and metabolic imbalances. So these things need to be tested, and the type of medicine that does this testing is called functional medicine. Almost all of this diagnostic testing now is covered by most insurance plans, because insurance companies have figured out that if you test and you don't guess, then people get well. They keep paying the insurance premiums, but they don't have to see doctors anymore.
Isn't that a wonderful thing?
Yeah. the way it should be. Sure. So some people will test very low for methionine. Some people will test high. And you really don't know which ones are which. So in general, you know, everybody needs a B complex. I guess that's where you start. Start with a B complex and start with digestive enzymes, lots of digestive enzymes, because frankly, with all the toxicities in the air, food, and water, our digestive enzymes are generally not working. People are starving for nutrition even though they're eating enough. So digestive enzymes, lots of probiotics, Acidophilus and Bifidus, fish oil, borage oil. We no longer have access to clean sources of fish and omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids, so they would be important. I give all my patients 10,000 IUs of vitamin A and 5,000 of D because we just don't eat organ meats anymore. Our ancestors were living on hearts, spleens, livers, you know, all these organ meats, and we don't get the vitamin D and the vitamin A.
So what form of A do you use?
Retinol. I use the vitamin A from cod liver oil. That's the only thing I give people. The vitamin A that is listed in a multivitamin is not vitamin A. Beta-carotene is not vitamin A.
Makes a difference, doesn't it?
I'm sorry?
Makes a difference, your form.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, again, some people genetically don't convert beta-carotene into vitamin A very well. They have the BCMO polymorphisms, so they need even more vitamin A because genetically they're incapable of making it from beta-carotene.
So
but
what
I
was
give
the form that you said you use? I'm sorry.
So from cod liver oil,
okay.
They extract out the vitamin A. They call it Natural A. Carlson makes it. A lot of companies make it, and you can buy it in any health food store. At least 10,000 for every person a day.
So, you mentioned taking B vitamins. What do you think? I'd like for you. Well, I don't want to lead you here. What do you think about folic acid versus active folate? What should people look at? People that have these methylating defects.
Right. Well, if the more you have a methyl tetrahydrofolate reductase, MTHFR genes, the more dense they are, the more methylfolate you need. Generally, most people won't need more than 5 milligrams or 10 milligrams twice a day of the methylfolate. The better B vitamin manufacturers will provide folic acid that is 50% regular folic acid, because we do need that too. The methylfolate may not get back to the original form, so we need regular folic acid 50%, and we need the methyl tetrahydrofolate 50%.
Do you have to worry about that folic acid trapping for people that have, homozygous mutations of MTHFR or
no.
MTR or whatever it is?
Absolutely not. That's almost a hoax, but it could have something to do with those who are not able to process B12 properly. So.
Okay.
As long as there's B12, there's not going to be a problem.
Well, let me ask you another question then, because I have issues about this folic acid thing.
Yeah.
Because I look at labs that people do, and particularly me. So if you take folic acid, let me get my thought back, and it traps, and you can't get it out, and you're eating pastas and rices and breads and things that have subsidized nutrition with folic acid. Like, I looked at a carton of milk the other day, and almond milk, I think it was. A half a cup of almond milk had 35% daily allowance of folic acid. So people who are taking large dose of vitamins, you know, multivitamins that have these large doses of folic acid. And if you look, many people who take these vitamins that don't know what they're doing, they'll have folic acid in multiple forms and in multiple vitamins. So they're getting like 800 times the amount of folic acid in a day, and they have methylating mutations. I just want them to be warned about it. I just think it merits a warning.
I don't think, you know, with drugs being the third leading cause of death, perhaps second. I think the prescription medication has taken over cancer now. But the Journal of American Medical Association has published articles on this that prescribed medication is at least the third leading cause of death. A few hundred thousand people a year are dying from medication. And I have never seen anybody die from folic acid. So I'm just not worried about it.
Does
but
it
I will
run
say this,
the best
form, the best form of folic acid, dihydrofolate. See, to convert folic acid to dihydrofolate, to tetrahydrofolate, and then methylate it, what upregulates those genes, those enzymes, is dihydrofolate. And as far as I know, I mean, I've heard that maybe you can get it in Europe or something, but that comes from leafy green vegetables.
Okay.
So a diet that's very high in leafy green vegetables is going to upregulate dihydrofolate reductase, which is going to convert the folic acid, the dihydrofolate, into the activated form where it's ready to be used. I encourage my patients to eat lots and lots of leafy green stuff.
So that means if you do that, and you have a problem methylating it, that you can cheat sometimes and not get in trouble, right? If you eat lots of leafy greens?
Yeah, well, you'll drive the synthesis of the methylation. Because, see, our genes are constantly adapting to the requirements at hand and the stressors they're under. And if lots of tetrahydrofolate shows up, even if you are a poor methylator and you don't make the methyl folate very well, it's going to still push those enzymes to do it better. So you get an epigenetic response just by having it there. And one of the ways we get around these quirky genes is that we use precursor loading. We load it at the front end to encourage, even though the gene doesn't work as well as a normal gene, still you can push it by having more of the substrate at the front end to drive that gene and make it work harder.
And that would be your leafy greens? What would be the
yes.
first thing? Assume that
yes.
I'm ignorant about that. Okay.
Uh-huh.
All right. That's very interesting. Okay. Sorry, I didn't mean to get you off track.
No, that's good. That's a very good question. And But with 200,000 people, you're dying from drugs. I'm not worried about folic acid, for heaven's sakes. We want to get people on more folic acid.
Of course.
So they get off their antidepressants, you know.
The reason I brought that up was because back when you and I sat on that board together, I was
mm-hmm.
taking a particular product, and I'm not going to say what it is, but it was one that we all knew about, and I was taking massive doses, like 15 of them or 20 of them a day.
Mm-hmm.
And my homocysteine shot off the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as I stopped taking those things, and they had lots
right.
of folic acid in them, it fell down. It gave me a heart attack, a big one. And
yep.
then afterwards, I kept taking them. And then my doctor said, oh, my God, this is what it is. And I stopped doing it, and it went down.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always wanted to know about that.
I think you just exhausted your B12. Folic acid is useless without B12.
Okay.
It will not work at all.
Okay, that's probably what it was.
It's B12. See, folic acid, like runners handing off the baton in a relay race, folic acid hands off the methyl group to B12. It's B12 that hands off the methyl group to homocysteine to make methionine. So
okay.
you probably just, you don't want to take B12 without folic acid or folic acid without B12 because they work together.
So let me ask you another question then. Personally, what I do an injection of methylcobalamin every single day. Can you imagine? 5,000 units every
mm-hmm.
single day.
Mm-hmm.
Is that not just a ridiculous amount? Is that normal?
It's probably overkill.
But if I don't do it, then I get numbness and anxiety and my teeth
right.
feel funny.
Yeah, what you have is if you do the 23andMe and then get it converted through...
I did that, actually.
Okay. So you'd have to have the MTR...
I do.
Or the MTRR.
I have both. Is that what
yes.
it is?
Yes.
Okay. So how do you stop that? How do you get out that
well,
cycle? How do you break that?
Well, if you've got B vitamins, so riboflavin's needed, the MTRR is... takes the oxidized B12 that gets used. It goes round, 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 methylating, and then it gets oxidized, and it has to be converted back into its activated form. And so riboflavin's needed, zinc, and SAMe is needed to convert the B12 back into its activated form. Have you tried SAMe?
I have it in my refrigerator, but I get intimidated by all the things.
You
know? And
oh,
I actually have a holistic doctor here in town with the doctor. I mean, he doesn't know. He's the one that
yeah.
told that guy that his homocysteine
yeah.
was okay. So
yeah, if you look up methionine synthase in Google,
mm-hmm.
you'll see a couple diagrams there that explains the MTR and the MTRR. And you'll see that SAMe or Aldomet is used to get it to reclaim the B12. So what happens is your B12 doesn't get back into its activated form. So once you have a B complex, you know, and possibly some zinc, but SAMe will get it back for you. And then it's rearing and ready to go, and you won't have to be on that much B12.
Oh. Isn't this so interesting, this genetic stuff?
Oh, God.
It's
going to change
medicine's
not going to be anything like it looks today in 20 years or 30 years. See, because it's going to be like Star Trek. We just go, and we have the person's genetic code, and we know right there on the spot where the blockages are and how to fix it. And then all we have to do then is just test to make sure we've changed genetic expression, optimized genetic expression, so that people can be happier, healthier, live longer, and just be, like I say, ultimately, when the stress is minimized, then there's the possibility we can look at the bigger picture and break out of this fight, flight, individualized stress and begin to connect with something greater. And the spiritual path just opens up. But boy, it's so hard when people are stressed and they're just toxic and they've got infections and candida. It's just so hard to see the bigger picture because life is about just surviving another day. And just getting through.
So do you actually do phone consults for people? Can they, or do they have to come to where you are?
I do phone consults, yes.
And does insurance cover any of that?
No, in order to get insurance coverage, and by far the greater cost of insurance is the laboratory testing. In order to get that, then they have to see me one time.
Okay.
In Washington, D.C.
Okay. And so if somebody came to see you one time and got testing, would the insurance pay for the consults after that?
Well, different insurances will cover different amounts, but the $3,000 or $4,000 of lab testing, almost all insurance companies cover that now.
Now that's a wonderful.
So that's,
wow, that's amazing.
That's the big ticket, yeah.
That's amazing. Okay.
Yeah.
So we got off the track of ADHD. I'm so sorry, but it's just so interesting to me. We have about 5 minutes left. Sorry. What do you want to talk about in 5 minutes?
Well, this topic, of course, interested in me because I got involved in mindfulness meditation in my 20s with my comped polymorphisms and my screwed up genetics. If I hadn't gotten into meditation, I probably wouldn't be alive right now. Attentiveness is a separate faculty of consciousness. It is not thinking, it is not emotion, it's not sensation or behavior. It's a separate faculty completely, driven mostly by the prefrontal cortex. So we can see it now on PET scans, functional MRIs. We can see the capacity for attentiveness or mindfulness that people have. So we make diseases out of everything, and we pathologize inattentiveness, you know, as a disease, for heaven's sakes. It's not. It's simply a person with ADD either has toxins in their brain, their prefrontal cortex isn't working, they could have major methylation defects or genetic issues like we talked about, they could have massive nutritional deficiencies, so that part of the brain just doesn't kick on very well. They could have essential fatty acid deficiencies. They could have Lyme disease or some bug that's infecting their brain. There's all these food allergies, celiac. There's all these biochemical things that make people inattentive. And it's, you know, I figured it out 20 years ago and wrote a book on it, published studies on it. It's not hard to go find the causes of this brain dysfunction so that an individual can then pay attention. It really isn't rocket science. You just have to compulsively, carefully look at one risk factor after another, after another, after another, to find these causes. And once you do the functional medicine workup, then you know, just about everybody can pay attention fine.
So I have a question for you here, and it's such a simple kind of question, but it's really not. Children who have ADHD, you know, many of them have that problem with textures and OCD things. How do you get a child who already has far problems with food consistencies and things like that, how do you get them to change their diet?
Yeah, well, the parents have to work at it. Parents have to work at it. We can send all the oils, the AD, the phospholipids, the omega-3, omega-6 fatty acids. We can send those right through the skin. So I just tell the parents to give the kid a massage once a night and just tape some saran wrap on their back, and all those oils will go in. So we got that problem solved.
Wait a minute. You mean you take the capsules of the phospholipids or the fish oils or whatever and put it on their skin? Really?
Sure. Oh, yeah. Sure. Or we have a compounder can make them up. If you want to spend a little more money, a compounder can make up some goop, and you just splash it on their back and rub it in. Sure.
Wow. Now that's news to know about. What other tricks do you know in 4 minutes?
Well, you got to be persistent. You got to change their behaviors. You got to get their sugar, processed foods out of the diet. The whole family has to do it. You can't pick on one person in the family. Everybody else is eating potato chips. So it really takes work, but what option do you have? Ritalin injures the brain. Ritalin will damage your child's brain. So why would you damage your child's brain? I mean, you love your children. Your children are everything to you. So you've got to go back to the diet that kept human beings on this earth for the last 500,000 years. You have to get into a Paleolithic diet and get some and start working the enzymes in the food. You can get them as powders and sprinkle them into food. You got to find a way to make some green drinks taste good, so that, you know, kids will get thirsty. Well, you're only going to drink your green drink, and that's all you get, you know. And so they get the idea. They get too thirsty. So you just little by little have to work it in, and you have to sort of do this yourself. And everybody in the family has to participate. So it's a family systems kind of a recovery, rather than picking on any one kid, any one person.
So, If someone has a child that has these issues, and somebody says, if my kid will do one thing to start off with, what would that one thing? Would it be mineral? Would it be zinc? Would it be?
Who knows?
Which one would you pick?
I'd have them tested, and then I'd know what the most important thing was. I mean, if they had no omega 3s in their brain, well, then that's a quote no brainer.
So. Good job, Charles. That's a good one. That's funny. Okay. All right. You know what?
If they had a serious gastrointestinal problem, of course that's easy too. I mean, they probably got candida or yeast or something. And you know, we make up these tasty nystatin antibiotic treatments, and they get them off of carbs and get them on probiotics. Those three things are not hard to do. If the gut gets well, a lot of these individuals will get well right away. Just by that.
You have to promise me you'll come back.
Oh yeah, sure.
I'd love to.
Of course, I'm obsessed with this.
My poor family. I've tested my entire family for everything you can possibly think of. Guts, and still, I told somebody the other day, I'm probably the only mom around that, and this is disgusting, but it's true, that watches my children's poop. You know?
Of course you would.
Mom, can you just please be normal? Please?
Anyway. All parents have done this since time immemorial.
Well, tell us one more time where to find you and what labs do you recommend? Do you Great Smoky, is that
you? Or Genova, they call it now, Genova Labs. Okay. And they're the main one that I use. Uh-huh.
All right.
And then, of course, the commercial labs like LabCorp and so forth.
Okay. And tell us again how to find you and your book.
The phone number is 888-632-6938. And the website is Dr. D-O-C-T-O-R, Chas, C-H-A-S-M-D, Dr. Chas, M-D, at gmail.com.
Okay.
And then it's drchas.com for the website.
All right. You have been a pleasure to have. I'm sorry I got you off in the weeds. It's just nice to have somebody to pick their brain about the topic. You have to come back and maybe do more focus.
Oh, no, we'll just ramble. That's okay.
I just love it, though. But thank you for coming
on.
I appreciate having you.
Thank you
for
having me.
Have a good evening.
Good night.
Bye-bye.